Thank you for listening to the CPA Trendlines podcast, a production of CPATrendlines.com, now available on iTunes. CPA Trendlines presents an episode of The Disruptors.
Welcome to Accounting Disruptor Conversation. I'm your host, Liz Farr from CPA Trendlines. My guest today is Randy Crabtree, co-founder and partner of Tri-Merit Specialty Tax Professionals and host of the Unique CPA podcast. How are you today, Randy?
I'm doing great, Liz, and I really appreciate you having me on the show. I'm really looking forward to this conversation.
Well, it was nice to meet you at ZeroCon and hang out with you a little bit, so that's why I invited you on.
I guess I passed the test at ZeroCon. Great. I'm thrilled for that. Yeah, I had a great time there. It was nice. I had known you of you. I knew your name, but we hadn't met in person before that. So it was so great to meet you in person.
Oh, thank you very much. Now let's get started because we have a lot to cover. Accounting talent in the US and the world has been scarce for years, and the pandemic made it worse. What are some ideas that you have on how to make things better?
Yeah, so this is, I love this question because there's a thousand different answers here. You had mentioned earlier that I do host a podcast, The Unique CPA. This is a common topic that comes up on there as well. I think for me, I'm very fortunate. I get to go out and speak at conferences and CPA firms and podcasts like this. And one of the hot topics I talk about these days is mental health. So I almost always go back to mental health. Unfortunately, our profession has this reputation probably as a high stress profession. And I think that's somewhat self-induced. I think that's a lot self-induced, but we had that. That's a side note. I think we have this reputation. And so what's happened is just people don't want to deal with that. And so not only do they want to deal with it when they're in the profession, and there's easy things you can do to change that. And I think we need to, as a profession, start changing that, but there's things you could do. And I'll talk about what my ideas are, or the ideas I steal from everybody else are here in a minute. But it's something that has to change, because not only are people leaving the profession, as you know, I think you've seen with the Great Resignation, but it's really technically not a great resignation. It's a great migration. They're still going somewhere. People are still working somewhere. They may just be leaving the profession. And in addition, we're not getting as many students going into accounting degrees. At least I've always assumed that. Jennifer Wilson and I were talking a couple of weeks ago, and she confirmed that that's accurate. So I'm basing it on her telling me that that is a true statement. And so it's, I think, part of the stigma of high stress profession, long work hours, nonstop deadlines, which is somewhat true, but there's things we could do. And so when I look at the, and sorry, Liz, if I'm rambling too much, you can stop me anytime. Right. And so some things I look at when I look at a profession, I look at it from a mental health standpoint, because I get to go out and talk about this, is what can we do? And I learn every time I go out and talk about mental health. So me personally in the profession, everybody deals with stress, not whatever that happened, then it's not necessarily bad. If the stress just keeps going on and on and on, that's bad. That's where we get people talking about burnout. You can't ignore the burnout. I've talked to many CPA firms that say, and they actually had one come to me and say, hey, we want you to come out and talk about mental health awareness, but don't talk about burnout. I'm like, I said, I'm sorry, but I can't do that. It doesn't go away if I don't talk about it. So I think we have to address that. And there's plenty of things we can do to address that. It's not something where people have to leave the profession. I think we can control burnout. Simple little things are that I've learned just talking to people is how do we make this a better work experience for people coming into the profession, or how do we attract more people? Just be smarter about your work time. You know, have a focus time. This is something I'm hearing more and more, and I didn't know much about this, but have a focus time. Have this, whatever, 2 or 3 hour block where you're not going to do anything else but the project that you're working on. You're not going to look at email. You're not going to answer your phone. You're not going to answer texts. You're not going to search the internet. And I was talking to someone on my podcast, Dan Brown's his name. He said, every time we get distracted, we lose 20 minutes of productivity. Mm-hmm. If we spend that 2 or 3 hours just on that project, you know how much more productive we'll be, how much less time we'll have to work, and how much happier we'll be. I think that's huge. I can't say I'm very good at that at this point. I just, like I said, I steal ideas from other people. I think that's great. Another thing we can do in the profession just to help us be better, and our employees would appreciate it, and this I think is huge, we don't have to be the biggest firm out there. We can get rid of the clients that, as a side note, I'll say CPAs, EAs, tax preparers, I'll use them probably interchangeable, but let's say CPAs, because I am a CPA, so I'm going to use that. As CPAs, we have this mindset that we have to help everybody. We're in this service industry, and we know this. We're experts. We know this stuff. We have to help everybody. If we don't help them, who's going to? Well, you don't. And so you have to just get rid of those, as people call it, the C and D clients. You have to get rid of these non-payers, slow payers, somebody that's tough on you, not just tough, but rude to your employees, you know, somebody that's not responsive. That's all unproductive and not worth our time. And so I think if you're trying to keep people and you show them that you're not going to deal with this, you're not going to allow somebody to treat an employee that you're working with this way, just start getting rid of clients. And you're going to be more productive probably. And you're probably more profitable when you do it as well. So I think that's a big thing. I can keep going on and on this, because there's so many things I think you could do. Let me go a few more things, if you don't mind.
Yeah.
All right. A few more things. I think another thing is, and I was just having a discussion with Brian Cush, who Brian's a partner at Intend to Lead. They're like a CPA for advisory type firm. They come out and help you be more productive in your practice. He's talking about downtime, turning it off at the end of the day. No, that's the end of the day. And it's a ritual you have to go to figure out that I am not going to work 24/7 anymore. I am at 5 o'clock. I close my computer at 5 o'clock. I start having thoughts of what am I going to do tonight? What am I going to think about tonight? And it's not work at all. And it's a ritual, but I think it's so easy for every profession, but for us, to just not ever turn off. We've got our phone, we got our text, we can look at anything on the weekend, the evening. And I think that hurts our productivity in the long run. And that will lead to potentially burnout and stress and anxiety or anything else. So I think turning off is extremely important. Again, I'm not the greatest at it. I am personally working on those things. Mm-hmm. And I can see it's making a difference, not only for me, but for the people I work with. Because I no longer will send them a message on a Sunday afternoon. I didn't expect them to read it. I would do it because it was in my head. I had to get rid of it. And then I get a response and I'm like, oh no, I should not have sent that message because I don't want somebody thinking they need to work on a Sunday afternoon. So I'm trying to get better at those type of things. Like I said, I got about 5 more things I could probably ramble on for another 20 minutes on this topic. And if you want to go to another topic, I'm completely fine.
Yeah, you know, I really agree with getting rid of those C and D and not even mentioning the F client.
Yeah, you are right.
There were enough of those D and possibly F clients that I had to deal with that the partners just kept stringing along. And you know, it was just not okay. You know, one of my coworkers said, yeah, the CFO says everything that she did wrong is my fault. You know, anytime we have a meeting, it's always my fault for something that she did.
Right.
And, you know, and they kept her on and burned out a couple more people. You know, it was just awful working with those people.
Yep. But unfortunately, we have too much mindset thinking this is the way it is and it needs to stay this way. And we need to help everybody. So,
yeah. Yeah. And I love your idea of turning it off at the end of the day, too. That is so important.
That's something, like I said, I've been working on more as well, even before I was talking to Brian about this last week. Sound like I was talking to everybody last week. I'm very fortunate. I get to talk to people like you all the time, people in the industry that I respect so much. It is just, I don't know how I got this lucky, but I enjoy talking about this profession. You know what? Because I love this topic, can I go one more thing?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right. And once I do one more, I'll probably do two more. That's just the way I work. So hopefully we've got 2 hours to record today, but I appreciate this, Liz. The other thing that I think that we need to do, the world's changed in the last couple of years, obviously, the last 2.5 years, the last 3 years, it's been changing forever. And I'm sure every generation says the world's changed. We've gone through a pretty dramatic change lately, but I think there's a fear of remote work right now at some leadership levels. I think if you're looking at new employees, they love the opportunity to remote work. Somehow that gap has to change, and we have to not have this fear of remote work, because we're going to attract and retain more people if we give them this flexibility. And I think flexible work schedules are great. I mean, there's obviously things you have to do when clients are in their office, and that has to happen. Mm-hmm. But I have no problem if somebody wants to work at 10 at night because they had their kids' t-ball game at 2 p.m. or whatever. I mean, and so I think flexible work schedules, as long as someone getting their work done, as long as, you know, I don't have to micromanage. And well, I don't personally manage anybody anymore. I gave that up 5 years ago. I don't want to do that. But as long as, you know, somebody's getting their work job, that's all that matters. And we've been a remote practice really from day one. We have an office in outside of Chicago. We have an office in the DC area. We have a handful of offices, but we have one or two people there. For the most part, people work remote. We are 60 people now, about. In a 15-year time frame, I think we've had 7 people voluntarily leave. And I think that's a pretty good, I think that's a pretty good sign that we're able to build a culture still while we're all not together. And so I don't think we have to be afraid of this. How do we have a culture? How do we train people? How do we get people to move up in their careers? We've done all of that. I can't say how. It's just been our way of doing things from day one. So I think that also will help attract and retain people if we're not afraid of that flexible remote type scheduling.
I agree. Flexibility is such a big thing. And there were so many firms that I was affiliated with that had, you will be here at this time. Mm-hmm. And, you can flex your time, but only about half an hour a day.
Right, right.
So
not that flexible.
Yeah, yeah. And I got to commend you on your really low turnover rate. You know, the number that you had leave in 15 years is how many left within 18 months of the last firm I worked with.
Yeah, it's an issue. I don't know. We're very fortunate. I understand that. I can't explain why, other than I can tell you things we don't do. We don't micromanage. I know that's mm-hmm. probably a thing. We give people flexibility and, you mm-hmm. know, of where they work and when they work. So those, I think, are three key things.
Yeah, those are all really important. Now, until recently, the business model for accounting firms hadn't really changed too much. They're still relying on hourly billing, and there was this hierarchical org chart. But we're beginning to see a few firms move out of that with value pricing, fixed price, even some subscriptions, and instead of the partner structure, a CEO structure. Mm-hmm. What are some things that you're seeing the firms that you work with?
Yeah, so
your own firm too.
Yeah, so let's talk about our own firm first. So we're kind of that traditional model. We're an LLC. We have partners in the firm. from that structure standpoint, we're not a CEO led. We're not, although we are. I mean, one of our partners is Managing Partner, so you could look at it that way. I think one thing we do a little different is we do look at this as a business. I think a lot of times in the accounting industry, the partners don't realize they have a business. What they have is they think, oh, I'm in the service industry. I just service other clients, other people, and rather than looking at it as a business. And so I think that's important to still have that service. I mean, that's, if we don't have good service, we're not in business, but we still have a business. And so look at it from that standpoint. We're always trying to figure out how we are better, how we're more profitable, how we, you know, keep people happy within the firm. And so I think that's important. And I think you can, this is, I don't, there was just somebody who put out a thought-provoking question a few weeks ago, is, are accounting firms even needed anymore? And I loved that idea. And the whole thing is, an accounting firm is needed, but I think it was more they needed in the structure that currently exists. I know you, I think you're familiar with Blake Oliver. This is something he says a lot. Is this even needed? Do we need accounting firms? Do we need the partnership structure? How can we do things different? I can see that happening. I don't know why it has to be a partnership. I mean, you can make a lot of money in this industry, whether you're a partner in a firm or not. You can still be a C-level, let's say, in a firm, or even a management level, and still do well. And you're also seeing this changing, I think, pretty rapidly with private equity coming in the industry. Aww. That's going to completely restructure the way that the industry, I call it industry, profession, the way the profession is going to be looking over the next few years. And it may not be the partnership level, you know, structure anymore. It may just be there's service C corps out there that are working with clients. And so I can't predict where it's going to go. I think it's going to change. I think there has to be reaction to what's going on in our profession from the lack of employees and private equity, I think, is part of that. You know, we're coming in, we've got lots of money. We're going to help make this more technical, more technology based. And to be able to do that, other people are going to have to pivot and convert to another structure, most likely. We'll see what happens. But from a billing structure now to that, what I'm seeing, first, go back there. From a structure of how your firm is set up, I still see the traditional model. Well, we work with CPA firms across the country. That's pretty much the model I see. I don't see many things change from that. I think it may be coming, but I really haven't seen that. I can tell you a couple people I know have started doing that. I guess I'll stop dropping names, but some other people I know are giving just ownership to their employees as well. And so whether you're a partner or not, you're just now an owner of the firm. And so it's just a different mindset, but everybody has that opportunity to be an owner of the firm after you probably meeting a certain amount of time being there and this type of thing, almost potentially like an ESOP, I guess. I could see that happening as well. So, but I'm not seeing it. I'm not seeing it very often. You know, if I deal with 1,000 firms, I'm seeing one or two that are doing some kind of different structure. But it'll change. It'll happen more. From a billing standpoint, from a pricing standpoint, that I think has a lot more legs right now. I'm seeing it at the smaller firm level more than the large firm level, or at least I talk to the smaller firms about it more and see it happening there. The larger firms in general seem a lot harder to pivot, just because they're so set in their ways, or they've been structured this way for so long. And now I've got 50 partners, and getting all 50 to say we're going to do something different is not always the easiest. So from a pricing standpoint, I think that's slower to change. And I can think of one firm that I talked to, it was just this last week. And he was talking about a certain service that they do, value billing on that service. And he had said, and this is a pretty large firm, and this partner said, I wish I knew about this years ago, because we would have completely restructured how we do business. That portion of our business is more profitable than any other portion of our business. And it's not just the value billing. it's communicating the value, because the client will pay for it if you communicate that there's a value there. If you can't communicate there's a value, they just think there's a higher price. And so that's what they've been able to do. So smaller firms, I definitely see that happen at a much faster pace than I see the larger firms doing it from a pricing standpoint.
Yeah. And, you know, to be honest, even the firms that said they did hourly billing didn't always stick to that 100%. You know, I remember having a conversation with one of the partners my first or second year there. And I said, well, how could you bill this return out at $800 when I only had, like, you know, there were only maybe $300 worth of work in it? And he said, well, that's because that's what the client values the work at. Mm-hmm. I'm like, okay.
Yep.
Then why are we keeping time?
Yeah. I had a firm that was, I was friends with the managing partner. So I came out of public accounting before I started Trimerit. I was, you know, the generalist doing taxes, helping every type of client out there from 1040s to every entity type, and probably way too many types of businesses within the business. Mm-hmm. I mean, I worked with the, you know, whatever, construction, fast food, doctor's offices. It's hard to be an expert in any of those areas when you're dealing with that many things. And I didn't learn that till after the fact. But what I was going to say is, one of my friends was managing partner of a larger firm in my area. And I can remember, this is probably 16, 17 years ago, they had a time card burning party where everybody took their last time card. They went out and I don't know where, but they put out a big bonfire and they did this ritual of, we're burning time cards. We're no longer billing based on time. I haven't asked them if that's still the way they're doing things. I kind of think they probably restructured that a little bit. That's what the rumor I heard, but that was pretty, at least in my mind, progressive, you know, 17 years ago, that they had made this decision that no longer were they going to base it on time. And that's great.
Yeah. And, you know, when you bring in technology, then how can you bill for something that now takes 2 minutes that used to take 2 hours?
Right.
Yeah. You go broke.
Yep. Nope. Exactly. And that's why you have to really bill. And that's why, but then the other thing is too, you have to realize that you have a cost in technology. Now it's not nearly the cost you had before, but you have to make sure that, you know, that you're making an investment in something as well.
Yeah.
So that's true. I agree. That's the way to look at it, I think, going forward. And for Trimerit, we've been pretty much, you know, a hybrid of value billing from the start, I would say. It's, you know, We do go based on value, and we do make, you know, we do look at time, and we cap our fees. So our fees, you know, because we, with us, when you're doing credits and incentives, you could show the value. I mean, you know, okay, it's pretty easy to show the value. Okay, yeah, you're getting a $100,000 refund. And so one things we've done is we've set a cap on that. Our fees will never exceed X percentage of the value of the savings. And so, you know, that's why I'm kind of saying it's a hybrid. We don't charge a percentage. We don't charge by the hour, but we do set a fixed fee based on time, based on value. I'm kind of probably going to, I guess, to keep name dropping, I told Ron Baker this about 7 months ago, who's the pricing guru, or the subscription pricing now. And he told me, Randy, you got to stop that hybrid part of it. It's got to just be value based. I said, all right, Ron, he is actually saying we could do what we're doing, subscription model. I'm like, all right, Ron, you're going to have to tell me how to do that, because I'm not sure I see subscription model in credits and incentives, but who knows?
Yeah. You know, that's what I was just thinking, because not every firm needs that on an ongoing basis.
Right, exactly.
You might need it for a couple of clients now and then.
Right.
And then you might not need it at all.
Right, exactly. So
yeah,
some of our services, credits, we can look at each year. Some of them are a one and done. And so I guess it just depends on the specific service potentially we do. But yes, to answer my long-winded answer to your question is that I am seeing change. I think more change is needed. And that's just as another commentary. I think way too long, we as tax professionals, accounting professionals, have undervalued our worth. And so that's a change that needs to happen. Because honestly, if we could start billing more as well, we don't need as many clients to deal with.
No.
We start solving our employee issues then as well, because we can get less done with, or more done with less people, or more revenue with less people.
Exactly. Now, speaking of that, what about growth? Do firms even really need to grow? Do they need to?
The questions you keep asking is things I've been thinking about a lot lately, because this is one that I was thinking about recently in the last month or so, is that, we're growing at a fast pace right now. Our personal business is growing at a fast pace, which is great. When you have more growth, we do have a little more. I mean, we don't have drama, but we have a little more than we had before. We never had any drama before. We have a little now, here and then, and just managing that gets tougher the bigger you get, just because everybody has a different personality and not everybody agrees on everything. Mm-hmm. I think if we're looking at growth in general, I don't think being the biggest is what you need to be. I think being the most profitable is important. I mean, well, to mm-hmm. some people. So you could be the same, increase in top line revenue is great, but if that doesn't increase, your partner or whatever, employee take home pay or just net profit or whatever in general, what's the point of the growth, other than, I guess, maybe attracting some more private equity to come in because we have all this. But I don't think growth, especially when we go back to question one you had with retaining or attracting employees into the business, why try to continue to grow when we're going to fight this battle of we're going to grow, but where do we get the employees to do this growth? And I think this almost all ties into everything we talked about so far, because if I can bill correctly, price my work correctly, I can grow net profit without having to grow top line revenue. And then I also save employee issues. And so I think that's important myself. I'm a big proponent on niche practices as well. Mm-hmm. I think that's extremely important. Again, going back to things we talked about already, when private equity is coming in right now and they're going to make larger firms, although private equity is coming down the chain, it's, started with top 20 CPA firms. Now it's top 100. It's going to be, your $2-3 million firm eventually if they have, a nice niche practice, I guess, would help with that too. I wasn't even thinking that. But if you could build a niche practice, that's going to help. If you do want to grow top line, I think that helps the growth tremendously, because as we kind of talked before, when I was a practice, I was dealing with every industry. How could I be an expert dealing with every industry? I just can't. And so if I could build a niche practice and be able to show that I know your business, Mr. and Mrs. Client, I know your business, I know your industry, I am an expert in dealing with the trucking industry or the restaurant industry or the, and I think you and I both know Josh Lance, the craft brewing industry. Mm-hmm. He does an awesome job with that. And so if I can build this niche practice, I can grow that firm. I probably not only going to grow top line, but I'm going to grow bottom line net profit as well. And showing myself as the expert and the passion that I have for that industry, I think that that's great. So I don't think we necessarily have to grow. If we want to grow, I think the path is niche. I know people argue with me on that because it just happened last week. Seems like a lot happened in my life last week, but it actually did. I was having an argument, a chat argument on, I think it was Zoom, about whether we need to concentrate on being niche practices. And I think it's important.
I think it also depends on what kind of practice you want to bill.
Mm-hmm.
Because I can see the merit of, you know, I live in a rural community, and I can see the merit of being the accounting firm in this town that works with the dry cleaner and the roofers and the construction people,
mm-hmm.
and the little restaurants and the little businesses. I can see that, you know, but if you want to be able to help these businesses become the best dry cleaner possible, or the best trucking company, or the best construction company, then you can't do it if your mind is pulled in 1,000 directions. You just can't do that.
No, I agree. But your scenario makes a lot of sense, because it's almost like time and place. Okay, this is my locale. This is my client base I have access to, and they need my services, because right now there's a lot of clients that need services that can't get mm-hmm. it just because there's just not enough people. I think that that's completely fine. If you're in a, you know, where I'm in Chicago, I mean, there's so many clients in so many different industries. It would be easier to build a niche practice here. And in reality, with just the ability to do any client's work anywhere remotely right now, that also increases the ability to be able to build a niche practice. Because if you're a niche practice with an industry that has one of these clients in every county, let's say, and not multiple, well, then, mm-hmm. yeah, your client base is spread out around the country, and that gets harder to do. But remote work will help that.
Yeah. Yeah. And on the other hand, you know, these itty bitty CPA firms in rural areas are the ones that are really having a hard time when it comes to sell. You know, I've talked to Brandon Poe about that a lot, that they just can't find anybody.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
And
you mean to sell their practice to, or to
yes. sell their practice to? Yeah.
Yeah. No, yeah. I've heard that too. Yep.
Yeah.
And then what happens? Then I have no idea, because those clients still need, going back to that, I want to help everybody, which I can't, but those clients still need to be serviced. And maybe it just becomes that we've got this online accounting and tax service that is going to do that. And I know people that built nice practices that way as well.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Now, what skills do accountants need to be successful today and in the future? You know, we used to have to keep the tax code and the FASB regs in our heads, and we had to be really good with the 10 key. But what do they need now? What would you counsel somebody to brush up on?
So there's a depends on what your goal is, I guess, in the profession. I mean, I had mm-hmm. when I was in practice, I had a partner who was a great technician, wasn't great at talking to people, communicating, wasn't great at business development. And you don't have to be. I mean, that's fine.
No.
But so if that's your goal, is just you love pumping out tax returns, I mean, then you need that, you know, tax skill, the knowledge, the expertise to be mm-hmm. able to do that. If you really want to go out and be an entrepreneur and build a practice, I mean, anybody can, I should say this, but I guess anybody can have a skill of doing a tax return or doing a financial statement or whatever. I think it's really important, especially, I think things have changed, but I'm the old guy now. Maybe everybody my age thinks things have changed at some point, but I really think I think empathy is really important. I think understanding the situation that somebody's in that you're talking to is extremely important. And I think we don't think about, well, maybe we do, but I don't think I see people thinking about that a lot. It's just, you know, understanding the current situation someone is and being able to communicate your knowledge of what they're going through, whether it's a business success or business struggle or personal success or personal struggle, or whatever it is. So I think empathy is big. I think listening ties in with that. And I'm not listening right now a lot because I'm talking a lot. So sorry, Liz, I probably should be listening more. I think listening is a huge skill. So I think it ties together with that empathy. An example, and I've been saying this a lot lately, and I think maybe this goes into how our business has retained people, but I personally do this thing. I guess I'm patting myself on the back now, but I personally do this thing is every time we hire a new person, I call them on Teams because we are pretty much remote. I'll call them on Teams and I'm probably about three people behind right now. So I need to catch up and talk not about what their job is or what their role is or what they're doing and just talk about them and who they are and what their passions are outside of work. And I think that's important to go get to know people one-on-one. And I hear so many cool stories when I do that, talking to people that you never would have heard about if you're just talking about, well, you know, code section 48D says we had to do this. Can you give me an explanation of that? I mean, that's not going to tell me anything about them. And so that, I think listening to their stories and who they are is important. And then I guess this all ties together. But I guess the next step I would say is communicating, because you need to be able to communicate whatever it is that you know they're looking for. If you can help, or you have an idea, or you have a solution, or you just want to be the shoulder that they can cry on, or whatever. But communication is so. What did I say? Empathy, listening, communication. Probably all kind of goes together. Mm-hmm. Anybody can. And I, not really, but anybody can have the skill of, you know, filling out a tax return or being a reporter of an income tax return, which I'm not a big fan of reporting what happened. I'm a big fan of advising and affecting what happens, but really anybody could do that. So having these interpersonal skills, I think, are important if you want to build your business, build your internal practice, or just help people in general.
I think empathy is a really highly underrated characteristic for accountants. You know, we're used to being the ones who have the answers. And when you're exercising empathy, you don't really necessarily have the answers, or there may not be an answer. The answer may just be, hey, I'm here and you can vent at me about whatever's going on, or I can celebrate with you when things are going great. Mm-hmm. But that certainly is not something that we, you know, I don't recall ever reading that in any of my textbooks.
No.
Yeah, certainly not. And, you know, it was not part of the CPA exam prep course that I did. And it certainly wasn't something that they pushed us to do when I was in practice.
Right.
You know, I'm hearing it more, you know, and as I started taking myself to conferences, then I started hearing it. And I was thinking, you know, well, why these are the conferences that the partners and the managers go to. Why don't they bring everybody?
Yeah.
To these conferences. Why?
Yeah. I like that idea.
Yeah.
That's one thing we do as a company, not from going to a conference standpoint, but going to our own, we'll call it our own, you know, Tri-Merit Summit. I actually think we're going to call it the Tri-Merit Summit this November. That's what it is, the Tri-Merit Team Summit 2022. So look for that on social media. We'll probably be promoting this. But what we do is we just get together as a group, since we are all remote, and just get to know each other. And you hear so many stories that have an empathy, I think, is important, especially with the, you know, the way the world's been the last few years. It's at least, I think, been helpful for me.
Absolutely. Now, we've talked so far about the things that accountants should do. Now, what should accountants stop doing immediately?
Immediately, the well, we talked about this already, so let me see. I'll see if I can come up with a second one. But I think immediately the first thing I think is stop working 24/7. I mean, stop. Mm-hmm. This is what we talked about earlier, right? The turn mm-hmm. it off at the end of the day. I think that is one of the biggest things we could do for our own personal well-being and for our business's well-being, honestly, is just turn it off at the end of the day. So stopping 24/7 on, keep yourself from waking up at 3 a.m. because you haven't turned it off yet and you're thinking about this next deadline or that next tax return or this, you know, financial statement I got to get done for this client. I honestly think if we could do that, we're going to be more productive and better personal experience with work and really a better example of as if you're a leader in your business, better example of what things should look like to others coming up in the profession.
Absolutely. I actually did have a good example at one of the firms I was at. The founder and main partner used to run marathons. So that took discipline of training plus the time to travel to New York City and to Boston and places like that. And he was also an avid skier. So weekends during ski season, he'd go skiing. And I went skiing with him a couple of times and had some really wonderful conversations with him about that, and that was really valuable time. So he was a good model for that,
right? I think I try to be a good model for that. We do a lot of fun things, but I personally am also involved in a craft beer bar in Chicago, so people know mm-hmm. that's a thing I do outside of work and that it's a passion of mine. And we had a great time this weekend. We had a big event at the bar and I got to be there. I haven't been there a lot lately just because I do travel a lot for business, but just mm-hmm. having that time where there was no thoughts of anything to do with business was a lot of fun. And I think we try to model that as leaders in our firm as well.
Yeah. Now, what do you think keeps people from changing? You know, accountants have known for a long time the things that they need to do. They need to create firms that people actually want to work in. But what keeps them from making these changes?
History, I guess. It's always mm-hmm. been this way, so it's going to keep being this way. And if it keeps being this way and you don't look that the things are changing, you're not going to be around. So I think mindset of, hey, we've done this for the last, some firms probably 100 years. It's done this way for 100 years and look how successful we are. And so we're going to keep doing it this is just the way it is. It's just a mindset thing. It's something that needs to change. Again, going back to things we talked about already, but private equity coming in, things are not going to be the same. You can't no. just stay down the same road. And if you do, I think you're going to have trouble. And so I think a good example of this in my mind, and I think, again, these are people, you know, in fact, I think one of these have been on your podcast is Matthew May and Kenji Cuaramato from Acuity. Mm-hmm. You're familiar with them, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I thought you knew that pretty well. So I think if you look at them, and I've talked to both of them, they're great guys. I've talked to both of them mm-hmm. and, they specifically talk about, building their firm in, I think they use the word weird ways. And so they didn't have that old mindset that this is the way it is. And this is the way it has to be. And they're, I don't know when they technically, Kenji was in business for a while, but then Matthew came on, let's say 12 years ago. And this is where they really started to change the way they did things. And they're a 150 person firm now,
right,
in that short time frame, because they didn't, one, they didn't look at their firm as just a service firm, but it is a business that they want to run as yes. an entrepreneur as well. So we need to look at that. That's something we, that mindset has to change. Two, they did things like they started with a lot of high-tech startups, and they took a lot of ideas from these startups and they mm-hmm. integrated into their business. And one of the things they did is and no other firms that I know are doing this, and some of them are, sure, but I haven't really seen it. They called outbound sales, but an inside sales team. They're just calling to get new business. Mm-hmm. Obviously, that's work. They're building that business. Their mindset is completely different than the traditional mindset. And so therefore, we just have to know that this industry is changing. This industry is going to go through some major changes. I keep saying industry, and people sometimes complain. I say industry, this profession. But if I say profession, then they're looking at it as I'm not a business. If I industry, now I am a business. So I'm going to stay with industry because I want you to think of this as a business. This industry is changing. And if you have this mindset that this is the way we've been and we're always going to be this way, unfortunately, I think you're going to have trouble down the road.
Yeah, I agree. You know, and I do really like the way that Kenji and Matthew are operating their firm. It's a really different place to work. And that's why whenever any of my CPA friends are looking for a new place to land, I always put out Acuity as one of my top choices, top recommendations.
Yep.
And I also want to say, you know, you're not going to get any guff from me by calling it a profession, a business, or an industry. I did graduate work in linguistics, and what that did for me was inform me that languages are really flexible. And as long as the intention is communicated, it don't matter what words you used.
All right.
Your grammar doesn't have to be perfect. You just have to communicate. That is the object of language. So,
well, that's good for me because I'm a numbers guy. I'm not, my wife's an editor. So when I do write things, she's very good at coming in and fixing my grammar, at least, or my punctuation marks and all that. I have the ideas and just get them down, and then someone else will clean them up for me. So that's good to know. Thank you.
Yeah. Now, client accounting services, client advisory services, client accounting and advisory, whatever you want to call CAS, that's a big thing these days. What do you think is going to be the next big thing?
So I don't know if you'd already say this is a big thing or not. I think it needs to be a big thing. We mentioned it already. And so I kind of keep going back to things I've already talked about. But I really, really believe this being a niche expert is going to be extremely important. And we said it earlier too. And because I think this is going to accelerate the need for smaller firms to become niche experts, because all this private equity that's going to be coming into our profession. Oh, I said profession that time. That's going to be coming into our profession is just going to change things. And it's just, you're not going to be able to compete with just certain areas, just because the technology, the dollars that they can put in technology as a smaller firm, you're just not going to be able to do. But if you have that, go back to the skills, the communication, the listening skills, the ability to talk with people, and you have the expertise now in the industry that they want to talk to you about, I don't see that can be a bad thing. So whether niching is already a thing or not, it definitely has started that way. I mean, I started as a niche practice now 15 years ago. We have a niche service, you know, credits and incentives, not a niche industry, you know, not restaurants or whatever. But I think that is just going to get stronger and stronger, a need for having these experts that communicate this knowledge to the accounting and tax clients that want to have that personal touch. And that's one way you're going to be able to compete with these bigger firms coming down to the smaller client size, which I think is going to happen with the private equity as well.
Yeah. And I got to reiterate your commitment to being a niche practice. You know, there were so many times when I was in practice, when clients would ask me a specific question about their industry, and I would have no clue. And we worked with a craft brewery, and He was asking about how you track the keg shells that go out, that he sends out to the different tap rooms around the state. And I'm like, I don't have any clue how you do that.
Right. Right. Yep.
And I started researching it and turned out, oh, there really is stuff that will let you do that. And so I reported back to him and he says, oh, that's too expensive. I think we'll stick to our Excel spreadsheet on the iPads and we'll just kind of hope that it works out in the end.
Yeah. Well, hopefully there's easy tools that going forward, when you're that niche expert, you're going to be able to help them with.
Yeah. Well, we made it through all those questions. I want to thank you, Randy, for coming on. You know, us podcast hosts, we got to stick together.
Yep.
So thanks for taking the time to talk to me. Now, if listeners want to connect with you, where's the best place to find you?
Probably our website is the best place, which is try-merit.com. And I assume you'll have some show notes or something. Otherwise, I could spell it out. Okay. That's probably the best place. I mean, we have a really good marketing team that puts me on a lot of social media places. LinkedIn's probably the most saturated, but we are getting very good at all the other ones now, including TikTok. I've got some videos out there on different tax credits and incentives. No dancing or anything, just explanation. But yeah, the website's going to be the best place to at least reach out and look at the meet the teams or the team button. Or I should probably know this. That's why our marketing team's there, because I don't know how to explain how to get a hold of me. So, but that's probably the best spot.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Randy. And you have a great rest of your day.
You too. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the CPA Trendlines podcast, a production of CPATrendlines.com, now available on iTunes. We hope you'll rate and review us wherever you find your podcasts to help other accountants find our show more easily. For more information, you can go to CPATrendlines.com.